Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to Double Indemnity, the podcast where we discuss and review new movie releases.
The new movies that are released.
Yeah, when they release, we talk about them. Mm-hmm. I'm Emily Klaser.
I'm Jonathan Pyle.
Jonathan considers himself a movie buff and a cinephile, whereas I am more of a movie enjoyer,
I don't know if I would say consider
popcorn
myself.
Lover.
It's just more of a fact.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. You just fact-checked me right there, didn't mm-hmm. you? Well, please forgive me for my mistake. I'm already messed up the entire podcast just from the start.
Great job.
Yes. But right now we are doing an Oscar series, so we're going through and reviewing all of the movies that are nominated for Best Picture. So far, I think we've done Triangle of Sadness, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Avatar.
Avatar, Way of Water. What else have we done?
I think that's it.
That might be it, yeah. Let me look it up, just fact check myself again.
Because those movies we have seen that we just haven't talked about on the podcast yet.
Yes, like we saw, like, you know, Top Gun and everything back before we started the podcast, so we didn't talk about them on the podcast. And we watched Tar. Was Tar
right,
nominated
Tar.
For Best Picture?
Yes.
Yes, okay, so we saw Tar, Avatar, Banshees of Inisherin, Triangle of Sadness, Everything Everywhere All at Once. So we're really knocking off the list, if you ask me, actually. Mm-hmm. Those are ones that we've saw and we've reviewed. So if you want to go see what we think about all of the Oscar movies that are nominated for Best Picture, go check it out today. Jonathan, what movie are we covering?
We're talking about All Quiet on the Western Front.
All Quiet on the Western Front, foreign film being represented in the Oscars Best Pictures, which is nice.
I love it.
It was fantastic. It deserved the recognition, I would say.
But for sure.
Before we get too deep into it, I do want everybody to be prepared that there are going to be lots of spoilers. We're going to walk through the entire movie in this podcast, so be prepared. If you don't want to be spoiled, come back later. Go watch it on your own and then come back later. But,
yeah.
And a final reminder is you can check out the podcast on YouTube if you want, or you can listen to it on any podcast platform. And if you want to give us your opinions on the movies we talk about before we talk about them, you can follow us on Letterboxd.di_podcast, where we post the next movie a week before we talk about it. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to comment, my sister commented because she's an angel and she really wants us to talk about Blonde, but I think we can do it after we finish the Oscar series.
Okay.
I do want to see Blonde just because I know it was really controversial, but part of me doesn't want to see it just because I know it's like all not true. Maybe I should do it with Carly because Carly knows all the old history, Hollywood history, and she could probably fact check the movie the whole time.
She probably would be able to do that.
Yeah, she knows literally everything about old Hollywood. But yeah, so maybe we could do that one day. It is more controversial, she said. Oh, she said it did a huge disservice to Marilyn Monroe. Painted her the exact way she never wanted to be seen. Oh, drama.
Wow.
See, I told you she'd fact check them. But yeah, that's
but
not about this
Marilyn
movie.
Monroe
that's something that we might get to do in the future. But
we'll see.
Let's get back to this movie, Jonathan. Do you want to intro
All
Quiet on the Western Front?
Synopsis per IMDb. A young German soldier's terrifying experiences and distress on the Western Front during World War I. This is directed by Edward Berger. He is a German director.
Hopefully he was German. He wouldn't understand any of the movie if he didn't speak German. I mean, I guess you don't have to be German to speak German.
Yeah.
But it probably helps if
it
you
would,
come from somewhere
help.
They speak German.
He's done a lot of TV series. He did Your Honor, which has Bryan Cranston in it. It's a new one. It's
never
out.
Heard of it.
He did The Terror, which is actually a good... I watched the first season of that. Hmm. Oh, wait. No, this is a totally different The Terror. Different mind. And a couple of the TV series, one Patrick Melrose, which has Benedict Cumberbatch in it. Fun fact.
I have literally no idea what you're talking about.
What else is new?
Hey. I sometimes talk about things that you don't know what I'm talking about. Like,
yeah,
in
true.
Tar, I knew all that musical crap.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. You got music over me. That's about
yes.
it.
Because your music taste is just awful.
My music taste is...
Jonathan and I have very different music tastes. That's why I'm saying that. So, carry on.
Different doesn't mean bad. This movie stars Felix Kammerer. I don't
We're
know how to
butcher
pronounce
everybody's
it.
Names because these are all
how do you pronounce
German
it?
People. Kammerer? I don't
Kammerer?
Know. Kammerer? I never studied German, so I couldn't tell you correct pronunciations. Just be prepared for us to butcher it.
Is his
and we apologize for that.
His debut role.
I love that, though. Like, I love it when in hard-hitting movies, like, the actor's never done it before. And I talk about this all the time, but, like, it's so much more believable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, in The Whale, I knew both of those actors, so it wasn't as believable. Like, it felt like acting. But in this movie, like, I didn't really recognize, at least Paul. I recognized some of the other actors, but
yeah,
Paul was the main character, and I thought he was very well casted. Believable. He did a really good job.
So got Daniel Brühl, who has been in a bunch of things.
Who did he play?
He played the, what was his name? Matthias. He's one of the generals that was trying to sign the armistice, and was negotiating with France, like in the train scenes.
Yeah, he was one of the diplomats guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have seen him in a lot.
He's been in a lot.
What else has he been in? You mentioned something. We were watching the movie and I was like, yes, I remember that.
Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, yeah.
He's in Captain America Civil War, Burnt, The Alienist, which is a very popular TV show, apparently.
Never heard of that.
Bunch of things.
Hmm.
And also stars, Albrecht Schuch. My pronunciation is just terrible.
I don't know why you show it to me like I'm going to be able to say it any better than you can.
He played, Cat.
Yeah, he's like his good friend, Cat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, yes.
Yeah, so it basically follows Paul and his like innocence going into the war, and then how he really learns like the truth behind war and what it really means. And there's a bunch of these other friends that he makes along the way. Cat was one of his friends.
Mm-hmm. He was already in the war. He was already there when he started. Then they just decided to stick together.
Yeah, but we'll get to that.
Budget for this was $20 million, which is pretty low. They made good use of everything, I think.
I mean, most of it was just dirt and, like, chicken wire on, like, pieces of blank.
I guess it's called chicken wire. I just always call it barbed wire.
Oh, I was confusing it with, like, a chicken coop. It's not chicken wire. Nobody's ever called it chicken wire. But thank you so much for agreeing with me on it. You really stood by my side there.
I didn't know it was called that.
No, barbed wire. There was just a bunch of barbed wire with wood and dirt.
And a ton of trenches.
And the costumes, too, were probably not cheap to make.
Mm-hmm. All the explosions. And,
And
box office is not available. Because it did not have a wide release.
Wait, so it's a completely unavailable?
I could not find it.
I guess when, I mean, it was on wasn't Netflix. It like put on Netflix initially? Because some movies don't come out on Netflix for like a little bit. But now the turnaround is crazy how fast it is. Do you remember back in the day? Back in the day, like it was that long ago. We're children right now. We're only like 22.
I know.
But back when you would like movies would come out in theaters and then I feel like it would take forever for you to be able to order it like on Netflix and get it in the mailbox on DVD. I remember like running down to the mailbox to get the Netflix movies that we got or like back when Redbox was a thing and like Redboxes still exist. Maybe we should have a date night where we like check out a Redbox just for fun. But we really liked for a while going to the library and checking out movies at the library. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty fun too. But I mean, when you look at the new releases, they are not at all new releases in the new release section. It's a pretty long turnaround to get them there.
Yeah, compared to what a new release is considered.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
anywhere else
now movies come out on Netflix a couple weeks after they come out in theaters. COVID really changed that for sure. Because I think Glass Onion was a good example where it came out in theaters, but then it came out on Netflix very soon after it came out in theaters, like
true.
A month or two.
And then the whole thing with HBO Max in 2020, like, or I mean, maybe that's 2021. Where it was in theaters and on HBO Max at the same time.
And people got really mad about that. I remember Trolls was one of the first movies to do that. Do you remember that?
HBO Max?
A Trolls movie came out and it was like one of the first ones to be like, we're going to be on streaming services and in theaters or like not in theaters or something. I just remember it was one of the first movies to do it and everybody was like infuriated. Is that a word? Infuriated?
Yes, that's a word.
But would you say infurious?
No.
Okay.
It made me furious.
But why would you say infuriated?
I don't know. It's kind of like how flammable and inflammable mean the same thing.
Inflammable. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Why would we even say inflammable? It doesn't even sound like a real word.
No
when
sense.
I'm saying it. I'm like really confused. Okay. Carry on.
Yeah, but we could have seen this at the theater near us, but I don't think.
Yeah, we have like a nice old theater time. Near us. I think it was it when my family was here?
It might have been.
I can't remember. No, The Whale was playing when they were here. So it must have been after, but we didn't go for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but they did have it at the theaters, which would have been nice, but it is a lot easier to take notes when you're not at the theater.
That's true.
You know what I mean? So I feel like the movies we want to talk about on the podcast, it's probably easier to watch a bunch of streaming services because we can pause it and take notes. And ain't nobody wants me walking up in a theater with a laptop, clicking away. Nor do I. I'm focused on my popcorn. I have other priorities.
I think the priority is the movie.
Whatever. It's the popcorn.
Sure.
I will not go to a movie unless I can get popcorn. And if I don't, it's a very extraneous situation. I remember the last time I went to the movies and got it without popcorn. It was my parents were visiting. And it was very recently. This was recent.
Right.
And it was really late. Like, we were just trying. No, it wasn't Knock at the Cabin. It was, are you kidding me? We got two bags of popcorn when we went to Knock at the Cabin.
What are you talking about? My family's here.
It was when we were picking them up at the airport. And their flight got delayed really, really late. And so we wanted to go to a movie to, like, kind of, you know, pass a couple hours while we waited. And I didn't get popcorn because we just had a huge dinner and we had crumble cookies. And I'm not kidding. It felt so wrong. Like, it was an awful movie experience. Like, I know my family can attest to this too. Like, going to the movies without popcorn is just not worth it. It's not the same. It's painful. It almost brought a tear to my eye, I'm not going to lie.
Well, we also saw Megan, so that might not have been worth it.
Yes, but Megan would have been so much better if I had popcorn to eat. I don't know. I'm just ranting right now. Carry on with your movie discussion.
That was all I had, and then I just was going to delve into discussion points. But
okay, well, do you want to do our reviews now then?
For sure. It might be a 5 for me, actually.
I'm not surprised at all. I would have bet money you were going to give it a 5.
I gave it 4.5 the first time. Now I'm like, it might be a 5.
I'm going to give it a 4.5. Mostly just because I don't like sad movies. And it was a really sad movie. But I don't know. It's just not a 5-star for me. Like, 5-star movies, I walk out and I'm like, whoa. You know? Like, The Whale. 5-star movie.
Yes, it was.
This movie was... It was really good. It was well made. And the story was very good. But it wasn't like... Wow. You know what I'm saying?
I don't agree.
Well, it's very much more your vibe anyways.
That's true.
So I'm not surprised you gave it a 5. But okay, do you want to get into talking about getting through the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so pretty much this movie is just a roller coaster of crappiness the whole time. Because even at the start, when it's a little happy, you know it's going to get crappy.
I know.
Happy to crappy real quick.
For them to realize, like, the inevitability of, like, what's to come.
You knew what was going to happen, yeah. I've seen war movies before. Never been to war, but I've seen war movies.
We've been to war.
No, we haven't. We've never been to war. Do not say that. But so, like, it starts out with, like, this very cinematic opening shots of, like, calm nature. And there's, like, these sleeping baby foxes, which were, like, really cute. But I didn't really understand the significance. I guess, like, the foxes were comparable to, like, the innocent young men who were, like, signing up to go to war. Okay. We're continuing to record. Okay. Sorry. Our computer just, like, whacked out. So there's, like, this contrast then, because you see that scene. And I really enjoyed... And didn't really see what they were doing at first with the first opening, like, 5 to 10 minutes. Is it basically, like, goes from that beautiful cinematic shot to, like, No Man's Land. Like, that terribleness between the trenches and trench warfare where, like, they're just blowing people up, shooting people, and there's just, like, dead bodies everywhere, which is really sad. But it's like they almost made No Man's Land seem peaceful at first. Like, mm-hmm. It was quiet and there's calm and there's nothing happening. And then slowly, like, you see the bodies and you hear the gunshots and, like, the bombs start to go off. And then they start to show the chaos and, like, it's just, like, men dying in an instant, like, with, like, no second thought. Nobody even cares. Like, just dead bodies everywhere. It's just crazy. It just blows my mind. And so...
Sorry if I interject.
Go ahead. No, yeah, please interject.
Like, throughout the whole movie, there was, like, to use an English vocabulary word, the, like, juxtaposition of, like, just the beautiful nature and then the surroundings with horrifying war experiences.
And they really have a full circle moment at the end, but we'll talk about that at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to comment on that now, that they did tie really well into the ending of the movie, which I thought was pretty good. And you see this random guy, his name is Heinrich or something.
Yeah, Heinrich, yeah.
Can't remember. That's kind of, like, pillaging about, like, upset, but he's doing his best. And then, of course, he watches one of his friends dies like one of his friends dies right in front of him and he just has to keep going. And this, of course, was like when I, like the first time I noticed a very ongoing theme in the movie, and it was that these people are literally fighting a rich man's war. Like the people making them do it are not actually doing it with them. They're just forcing them to kill each other for like pretty much no reason, in my opinion. And maybe they think they have a reason, but I don't think it was enough to like make people have to do stuff like that. It's just crazy. Like these men just go out there and they just do it. If you think about it, like they don't have to. Like they these armies of men, they just do it. I don't know.
Fighting other people's.
No, obviously, I'm not sitting here saying, I'm not saying they should have like said no and retaliated. Like, obviously, that's not what I'm saying. But it's just crazy that that's the way that the world works. Like one big guy tells thousands of small men, not small men, but you know, societally considered small men to like go fight a war and they do it.
Yes.
And they just go kill each other for no reason.
Still that way.
This is a very reoccurring thing the whole time. So yeah, I don't think that'll ever change in human nature, which is sad. But then they end up showing you a bunch of dead bodies after all the explosions and you see Heinrich has died and he's in the pile of dead bodies. Mm-hmm. And then they go through the life cycle of like the clothes,
the jacket,
which was really smart. So like Heinrich dies and then they show you that, then they show them stripping the dead bodies' clothes, throwing them in a pile. Then they bury the bodies and then the clothes go to these women who are sewing uniforms and they sew the clothes, they make them new again basically, and then they send it back out. And it's like shows the life cycle of like war through clothes. Like that's the one thing that continues,
that like soldiers are just like meat to just put out on the field, and once they're dead then you just take the jacket back.
They're pretty much recyclable. Like they're basically saying people are recyclable. It was so sad. Like it was awful.
It was such a brilliant way to open the movie though.
It was so smart. Like whoever came up with that was genius. Like I didn't see it happening at first. I thought Heinrich was going to be the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And then
exactly.
It full circles later to Paul getting Heinrich's jacket. And then you watch Paul go through that life cycle basically again. Like it's just over and over again. It was so sad. It was awful. So that sucked. But I will say the music, that's when the first like main theme music, it's like just this like 3-note progression that they play over and over again, but it's like
so
terrifying.
Intense.
It's
so good.
It's really scary.
It really had an effect.
It had a great effect. It was awesome. It did exactly what they wanted it to do.
Yeah.
And they just played it over and over again in the movie. And it's like, even when the war had ended, they played it and it was like, shit's not over yet.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not over.
Like it was like the ghosts coming out, like the darkness, you know, when all of a sudden it's a sunny day and then it just becomes this gloomy thunderstorm of a day. Mm-hmm. Like that's what it felt like every time you heard the music. So whoever wrote it did a great job. Who composed it? Do you know?
I can look it up.
No, I didn't notice any of the other music in it.
No, I did.
But I thought that part was very iconic. So like I definitely noticed it.
Volker Bertelmann. Let's see what else he's done.
Yeah. See, has he done anything else we know?
He did the movie Lion.
That's a big movie.
He did, what other movies would you know? Stowaway. The music in that is actually good.
I don't know Stowaway. Well, it's probably good because he did it.
The
well,
old
now you
guard.
Have a new guy that you like. That music is really good. Jonathan has like a playlist for his favorite movie scores, and I feel like that's one you should put on there. Mm-hmm. But then, so moving on with the story. So after this guy dies, you see the life cycle of the clothes. Then it jumps to like a bunch of like happy boys biking down the street in this beautifully clean, pristine rich neighborhood
in Germany.
And you see Paul, the main character, doesn't have his like permission slip signed. So he must have been under 18, or I don't know what the age limit would have been then that you needed a permission slip.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he just didn't have his parents sign it.
He didn't. His parents refused to, I think. His mom didn't want him to go to war. And so his friends are like, just forge it. I'll sign it for you. Like, we're going to go. Like, we're so excited. Like, it was almost like a, you know, when you're a kid and you're going on a school field trip and you're like, oh, just forge your parents' signature, you know, which I, of course, never did.
I never did that.
I actually only ever forged my parents' signature once on a school assignment. And it was because I failed the national anthem test in like second grade. And it wasn't because I was too embarrassed to tell them. I just straight forgot to get them to sign it.
Oh.
Like the whole thing was like, your parents have to sign it to prove that they know that you failed it or something. And I just forgot to show them. And so I was like, well, I have no other choice. I have to sign their signature.
Thing.
Yeah, I was a criminal
the
from
the national
start.
Anthem.
I know it now, but it's kind of embarrassing. But also, I was like 7 years old. I could barely read and write. I don't
still,
remember. I remember
no
I was. It was a pretty embarrassing moment for me, and it was very traumatizing to the point where I remember it now.
apparently.
That's the only time I ever forged it for like a permission slip or anything.
Oh.
Yeah. So pretty good kid in general, I would say.
Maybe.
Whatever. Moving on.
Things have gone downhill.
So basically the boys are like super excited to go to war. They go sign up. They get this pep talk from somebody saying all of you guys are going to come home and have like the glory of war, you know, like you're gonna be these cool guys, and it's like
heroes, and
it's like I'm sitting there like, we all know they're not gonna come home, you know, like we know that's a lie.
Yeah,
like instantly. And instantly. Like they believed it, and this guy's pep talk is like, it's like easy, it's fantastic, it's fun, war is the best, easy breezy beautiful cover girl, like that's literally cover what girl. He was giving them. And the men like started cheering, like the boys really had no idea what they're getting themselves into. It was so sad. And like, we all know, you know, like any audience member watching knows, like it's not going to be that. And I mean, at the time, if you think about it, like their exposure to war was completely propaganda. It's not like they had
exactly
yeah. Instagram or like now, you know, we have documentaries and like more accurate movies, not even accurate. I mean, it's all still like Hollywood magic, making it seem probably not at all what war is really like. But like, I feel like we have today a better understanding of what war is compared to then. I mean, if you even think about it, like with the Vietnam War, they broadcasted it. So
yeah,
like
exactly.
People
yeah.
were literally watching the war on like national television. Whereas like back in the early 1900s, like that was not a thing. The only understanding they had of war was propaganda.
Was what the government told them and what.
And obviously the government wants you to want to go to war, you know? I don't know. It was really sad. And I thought that was interesting. Like, you can't blame them for not knowing, you know?
No, not
like,
at all.
They didn't have the resources to know, and they didn't like, they just thought that that's what they should do for the betterment of their country. And they thought it would make them better men. And like, they probably were young guys
yeah.
who wanted to be like men, you know, and they thought that would make them a man. I just don't know what they were expecting, you know, like what did they think it would be like?
I don't know.
Pretty
easy.
Yeah.
Kill a couple people and you're there.
Yeah. You just go back to camp,
yeah.
play cards or something. I don't know. It was really hard to watch. Like, you knew it was going to be bad. But yeah, so then Paul like gets up to the front, and he's worried they're not going to accept his permission slip, but they did. And then they gave him Heinrich's uniform, and you're like, oh, there's a full circle.
And he's like, this has a name on it.
He's like, this is somebody else's. Yeah.
And he takes the name tag off. It's like, no, this is yours now.
Yeah.
And then there's like 10 of the name tags just below him, like where he's throwing them.
Yeah. Because it's just like, I think the first time that maybe Paul could have even had an exposure to the fact that like those are dead people
mm-hmm.
who had these uniforms
right,
and who
no
don't
idea.
Anymore. Like a dead man used to wear that. I don't know. It's just so sad. But yeah, I thought that the opening scene was genius, and like they did a good job at showing the innocence of like the young boys like running off to war, getting so excited. But yeah, and I wrote it like the diluted idea that they had fed to them about what the war front mm-hmm. was really going to be like. So once they join the war effort, they get driven into a bombed up city, and it's a really good contrast from like this pristine, beautiful city that they're from and that they're coming from. And then they're driven into this bombed up, like
yeah.
just completely destroyed like town. And they are like marching and bombs going off. And it's a very quick and rude awakening. Like the guys are stumbling about. They can barely walk. They
barely
have to put
walk.
Their gas masks on. And
yes. And he forces Paul to put his gas mask on for like the next couple miles.
Yeah, because Paul had tried to help his friend put his gas mask on before he did, and he got in trouble for that.
Yeah,
and so then he had to wear his gas mask for like the rest of the day, basically.
Yeah,
which I mean, it did not look comfortable at all. It looked really bad. But yeah, then they like get to the trenches that they're gonna be defending or whatever, and Paul and his friend Krop. I think his name was Krop.
Mm-hmm. Krop.
We're on guard duty the first night, and Paul and Krop are like looking over the top across the trenches into no man's land because they're like, ooh, what is this? Like, this is crazy. First time. Like, they almost thought it was fun still. And then Paul, I guess, like, I didn't know this, but like, if you have your helmet like above the trenches, they can see the reflection off of it and they'll shoot at it. And so you have to like keep your head moving so that they can't see it.
He fired his gun,
so
and
then
they saw the muzzle flash.
Mm-hmm.
And like if they just see a light, then they assume person, and so they shot at
it. And it ended up hitting his helmet, and he got like taken aback by it. And it was like the first like, holy shit, you could have just died right
yeah.
now. Like the guys were like, oh my god. And then the sergeant just walks by and like he's like, don't do that. And he walks
shoot,
away.
Move, shoot,
yeah,
move.
Shoot and move. And that's it. Move on.
Like, which makes sense.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was definitely a rude awakening. Yeah. So then the first night was really bad. There was bombs and guns, and his friend died, basically. The friend that he had tried to help with the gas mask.
Oh, right. Yeah. So they got all into the bunker, and the French just started barraging them with artillery. Mm-hmm. And a collapse, and he steps on his glasses and realizes
those were his friends. The person, and then he finds his friend's body. Yeah. It was really sad. Yeah, because it was like the next day he'd just been buried in like wood, and he like was in this shelter, or what did you call it?
It's a bunker.
That, yeah. He was in a bunker that like had collapsed on top of him. And he wakes up the next day. They are pulling wood beams off of him. And then a couple minutes later, they're like, "You okay? Okay, go collect the dog tags off all the dead people." And so like he's doing it just casually, just fine, doesn't care. And then the first time he's like, "Oh my God," like, is when he finds that's his friend's dead body. And then that's when it hits him, like, "Oh my God, my friend just died." I just don't understand. I just didn't think they, I don't know. It's weird to me that they were surprised by it. But you know, if I had to go to war, I'd probably be surprised by it too. You know, mm-hmm. the first time that you experience and see something like that. But yeah, so he is just shooketh. And he like buttons up his friend's jacket and tries to tidy him up. And like, I mean, there's really nothing you can do. Like, I don't know. It was really sad. Like, it was like,
it's hard. Yeah.
You were like, this is what this movie is going to be like the whole time. Just like pretty much like sad crap over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So that's right the gut. Introduction chapter before they kind of jump to him being like, hardened.
Yes. Yeah, it's like hardened. A year and a half later.
It was like 18 months. Yeah, then so after the scene they jump 18 months
to 1918.
And they're reading through the names of dog tags at the war office, and then they I don't know if they did or not, but I had a feeling that they like said his friend's name, but I can't remember.
I have no idea.
That would mean I thought that they did, but I might be wrong, but I thought they said his friend's name, and I was like, if they did, that means they didn't go through and tally up the name tags for a whole year and a half, and his family thought he has been alive for a year and a half.
Oh man.
But I might be wrong. I don't remember what his original friend's name was, but they show Paul and you can just see in his face like he is hardened. Mm-hmm. He is not the same. And the acting is so well, like his facial acting. Mm-hmm. I was gonna say acne. Sorry.
His acne was terrible.
To talk about with my face. But he, like, you could just see the change. And I think his facial acting was so good that that's what made him, like, so good for that role. Because mm-hmm. the whole time he's just making these, like, crazy facial expressions.
Yes.
Of, like, and just fear like, and sadness and confusion and, like, just all mixed up in one. It was so good. And, like, also just, like,
really the, hard to act that
he
way.
Didn't care anymore either. Like, it was just got to a point where you're numb to it, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what he has reached. And they're in Champagne, France. And this is when they jump over a wall at like a French person's just like farm.
His farm, yeah, just to steal a goose.
To steal a goose. And his friend almost gets shot stealing the goose.
And then it's like they're laughing it off.
Yeah, they're laughing it off and they're having a good time. And then they go and they make the goose and they're all like just having the most amazing time of their lives. Like eating a goose.
Because that's the first like real meat they've had in a long time.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So they were like just overjoyed by it. And then when they get back to their camp, they see a bunch of women walking afar and they're all starstruck just by the idea of a woman. Mm-hmm. And they don't see them up close. They're just like, oh my gosh, it's freaking out. One of their friends like literally chases them and goes off with the women to have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And then they start talking about what they want with their life and like they start to kind of get these dreams and like what they want to do after the war. And then that gets shut down real quick. They're kind of like, yeah, no, that's not gonna happen. Like,
oh right, I forgot.
Yeah, one of their friends was talking about how he wanted to be in the NCO, which I don't know what the NCO is, but I'm assuming it's like NCO. A police force or something.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea. But they kind of like for a second you see them dream about life after the war, and then it gets shut down real quick.
Immediately.
Yeah, like you're not gonna be able to do that. But then, so Paul's friend Kat, who you already mentioned, is somebody that he was introduced to really early on, who was kind of like a mentor for him.
He kind of knew he'd already been in war for at least a couple years.
Yeah,
or so.
He had been doing it for a while and he was like kind of helping the newer guys not get crushed because the generals don't really like give them any guidance. They just kind of yell at them and make them feel bad. And so Kat kind of came in as like a mentor figure for him, helping him figure out the war and all the crap that was going on. And I thought it was interesting because they don't tell you who Kat is or who even Paul is from the beginning of the movie.
Yeah,
so you kind of just assume that they're the same class structure. And then at the end, like right at the end, they go into the fact that Kat is actually a cobbler and he doesn't know how to read. Mm-hmm. And he makes shoes. And Paul comes from like a rich family.
He's college educated.
He's college educated, yeah. Like he can read and write and like all this stuff. And it's funny because you don't know that. You don't put them in social classes. And it's funny how the second that you end up in like a war zone or something, you're all the same. And what makes somebody like socially higher than another is just their survival skills, you know, and like their strength.
Unless you're like, I guess you're not, wouldn't be all the same if you were like a lieutenant or an officer for that matter. But
yeah, but just like all of the men who are mixed in like within your own role, you know. Because most of those higher up men, I feel like, were rich guys who went to military schools and like had connections and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you kind of know those were all rich guys. But all the people who were just like normal soldiers, they're just like a mishmash. And it doesn't matter at all, like who you are, where you come from. It matters what you can do, you know.
And if you make it.
Which I thought was interesting. Yeah. But so then there's a scene with Paul and Kat where they're pooping in the woods. Like they have this special little shack set up where you go to poop.
Outhouse. Just out in the...
In the house, yeah.
Out in the woods.
Yeah, a outhouse out in the woods. And they're literally just sitting there pooping next to each other. And I'm like, I guess I do that every day, if you think about it. But there's just like a wall in between us that for some reason makes it more socially acceptable. But if I had to actually like poop in front of people casually...
During war, I guess that kind of barrier just...
You don't care.
Matter.
You just got to get that poop out and get going.
Got to get to the front line, man.
I don't know. I remember watching like, oh my gosh, I couldn't. And also, I will say the entire time they were sitting there pooping, supposedly, I didn't hear one poop plop. So I feel like they were just sitting there, booties out, and they didn't actually poop. That's so unrealistic.
Maybe they were peeing. Who knows?
I don't know. Didn't but they were sitting down. Why would they be sitting down to pee?
I don't know. They were reading stuff.
Yeah. So Kat's wife had just written him a letter and he couldn't read it. So he had given it to Paul to read to him. Mm-hmm. At that time, you don't know that he can't read, though. You just kind of assume that he was too sad to read it himself or something. So, yeah. And they just talk about how it's going to be really weird to have to go back to their old selves. And you find out that Kat has a kid who died. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a little bit of an emotional roller coaster when they go through the letter. Like happiness and then sadness and all that jazz.
I like that scene.
I thought it was a good scene too. It was well done. And it definitely shows bonding between Paul and Kat. That like they are at a point where they like would read each other's letters to them from their families. Mm-hmm.
I don't think Paul got a letter, did he? No.
Did Paul? No, he didn't. Okay. He never got a letter in the movie, no. Hmm. But... that night you find out there's supposed to be another company that was supposed to arrive at their camp and then they didn't, and this is like kind of the first hint in the movie that like the Germans are kind of on their downfall.
Losing.
In the war.
Yeah.
Like they're starting to lose that like the companies aren't showing up and there aren't as really that many people there, and I do think this is a good movie because at least being American growing up, I never saw a lot of movies, nor did I ever learn much about the German side of the world, like of World War One. So like I don't really know what it's like, and I appreciate that it kind of humanized it and it showed you just like the normal everyday men of the war, you know.
Yeah, it was just men fighting, like
they were
richer
fighting someone else's war.
War.
Yeah, like they were just normal people.
That's always how it is.
And I thought it was, I've never really seen a movie where they show it from the German perspective, so I really liked that.
Mm-hmm,
I thought that
yeah,
was really really well done.
So this movie is where's my fun fact? So this is based on a book.
I didn't know it was based on a book. Is it a true story or is it just based on a book?
It is written by Eric Maria Remarques, inspired by his own experiences as a German soldier in World War One, notable for its realistic depiction of the horrors of battle.
Well, that's cool. It was written by somebody who really experienced it. Because at this point... there aren't a lot of people still alive from World War One.
No.
People who fought in World War One, I mean, they'd have to be like 120.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And this is the third rendition of this story. So the first was a movie, All Quiet on the Western Front, in 1930, which won Best Picture. Fun fact.
Wait, there was an American movie made after before? With the same name?
Yeah. I don't know if it's American.
Wait, imagine if the same story wins Best Picture two times.
That'd be really cool.
That's so cool. The story was that good.
I really
good.
Want it to. It won't. But
it won't. But it might win for foreign film, though.
Yeah, it depends on what it wins in other categories, but it probably will.
If there wasn't such like stiff competition this year, they would win for sure.
You're right.
Very well made.
And there was a lesser known version by Delbert Mann, All Quiet on Western Front. This movie is the most expensive German film in the history of Netflix, which makes sense.
Really?
And then also fun fact, so the Germans, like Germany as a whole, banned this book for a long time, All Quiet on the Western Front.
Why?
I'm not really sure why, but I know it was part of the burning of the books with Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of the books that was, of course, they burned all the books.
Because it showed war in like a bad light or something? Like it doesn't help with their propaganda or something?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And it was banned for a long time.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. This was a banned book.
Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of cool. I didn't know that. Now I feel kind of scandalous. Didn't read the book or anything, but I watched the movie.
I want to watch the old movie now.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was another movie. Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool. And it won for Best Picture? What year did it win?
I guess that would have been 1931.
Oh, they made this in the 30s?
Yeah, I said, 19.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, black and white.
I did not hear you say that part. That's so cool.
Yeah, and then
we should totally watch it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. I wonder where you can watch it. HBO sometimes has those older
probably
movies.
Probably on the Criterion Channel, but I don't have access to that anymore. My subscription ended. That was back in like last August.
I didn't even know that was a place you could watch things.
I've told you this so many times.
Well, you're going to have to keep telling me because I'm not going to remember.
Let's see where I can watch it.
Okay. So, next in the story, the bros, just being bros,
the bros,
are out like searching for people for some reason. I never really understand what this was, but they were looking for people, I guess just like deserters or something or...
What scene was this? In the trenches?
They were like near the train station and everything. And there was a blown up man in a tree. And they're just like, crazy.
Crazy.
And they
must
just
have
keep
been
walking
there for
by.
A while.
Yeah.
You see his like carcass just like on the tree.
Mm-hmm. And then his friend Krop finds like a advertisement of a woman and like a man. And he just has a little bit of a French conversation with her.
Yes.
Her like picture. Because you can tell he's like a gentleman, you know. He didn't like chase after the girls and stuff. He just like admired the women for their beauty and their existence, I guess. And you could tell he really missed women. Like he really hadn't seen a woman in a very long time. And so he asks her, he's like, "Do you want to come with me?" And he was like, "Okay." And so he like cut her picture out and took the ad with him.
Yeah.
And like he ends up hanging up later and it like does a full circle moment with that advertisement. But I thought it was really cute. And very sweet.
Yeah, and they find the room with all the bodies.
Yes,
right?
There's
all
a room.
Gas victims.
Yeah, full of like a bunch of young, I guess, soldiers, like newer soldiers, and they all had died because they took off their gas masks too early.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that was so sad. And then one of the men says, "Soon Germany will be empty."
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, it was really sad because like they're just dying in troves. It's just like, imagine being one of the unlucky guys who are in the regiment that they tell you to take your masks off too early.
Yeah, that's just unlucky. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
It's literally awful. Yeah, it's straight up just luck. So they keep, at this point, they start showing the contrast between the diplomats and the soldiers. So like, it's jumping between like fancy diplomats and generals eating fancy food and then the soldiers like, basically just dying. And this is when they introduce Matthias. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Matthias. Yeah. On the train. He's like a diplomat. He's got glasses. He's on a train to somewhere you don't know where. But all you know is he's a fancy guy because he's got his own bed and like bathroom and fancy clothes and everything. And they show the train kind of like jolts and he pees on his shoe a little bit and he freaks out about it. And he's like, oh, and annoyed. And it's funny because like the men on the battlefront, like a little bit of pee on your shoe, who cares? Like, it's not even, nobody cares. And it showed you like the differences between their lives and annoyances and the contrast.
That was throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
Was
It was very really well done. Like, it's really smart that they thought of that. Oh, he pees a little on his shoe. Like, somebody wrote that.
Yeah.
You know, pee a little on your shoe and then be frustrated by it to contrast, like, what the men on the battlefronts are facing and like what you're facing. You know?
Scooping out, like, mud with their helmets just out of the trenches.
Yeah, literally scooping, like, because the trenches are filled with water and they're using their helmets to, like, bucket and using them as a bucket to, like, get the water out of the trenches. Like, yeah. The contrast was really well shown.
Because, like, and then rats and disease would just, like, run rampant. Mm-hmm. In the trenches, and that's why a lot of people died too. It wasn't just because of wasn't just bullets, it was disease. Lack of food and disease. And
yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me. And also, like, winter and stuff, mm-hmm. not being well prepared for it, which is something I feel like they always say, is like, you don't want to be in Russia fighting a war in the winter time because you will lose. Isn't that like a thing?
Twice over. Napoleon tried it and failed, and Hitler tried it and failed.
Yeah, the Russians, they know winter, that's for sure.
And they just slash and burn. They burned all of the, killed all the animals, burned all the farms, all the crops, and then retreated. And so the Germans followed and starved. Twice over.
But so, like,
well, I guess it was France and Germany.
So the Russians, like, when they retreat, they're fine. Like, they can just handle winter easy, basically.
I guess because, yeah, they're used to it. I mean, sure, wow. It was hard.
That's crazy. My gosh.
They can handle a lot better than the other countries can.
Hmm. Well, at this point, then they introduced General Friedrich. And he is another military guy. He's not on the train. He's, like, in his castle somewhere, kind of on the battlefront in a sense, but not really. And he's just yelling about how he will never surrender, and he just wants to send more men off to die. And one of the regiments that gets called by his order is Paul's,
mm-hmm.
to go to getting called to go fight and do the things, just because this man just is, like, angry. Like, he's just aggressive. He just wants to fight. And it comes to a full circle moment with that later on in the movie, too.
Lots of full circle in this movie.
It was cool because this was when they first show the contrast of, like, the first time Paul went to war. And he was getting bussed out there. And it was bright. Like, the color was bright. In the color...
The
color editing was very bright.
Oh, yeah, color grading.
The color grading was very bright, and the men were cheering and laughing. And then this time, when they're bussing him off to war, it's silent.
Yes.
And it's gray, and it's sad.
It's
and
all quiet.
It's all quiet, baby. All quiet. Yeah, so it's, like, dark and dull, and no one is talking. And then you cut back to the diplomats, who are, like, on their fancy train, eating their fancy breakfast foods. And then it cuts to the men waiting in the trenches. Like, they really did a good job, like, going back and forth between the two different lifestyles and the mm-hmm. two different experiences at this time. And then this is when Krop, like, hangs up his advertisement of that woman he found, and he gives her a kiss and he says, "I'll see you later," or mm-hmm. "I'll be back soon," or something. It was really sad. Like, almost like it was, like, his woman, you know?
Yes.
Because most men, like, had a picture of their family, and
yeah.
I don't think he had any, like, lady callers or anything back home. So he just had that woman kind of giving him hope to come back to women as a whole.
Yeah, come back to the real world. And
yeah.
It was sweet.
And then, so this is when you find out where the guys on the train are going. Do you have anything you want to say? I'm ranting off.
Sure. Yes, I do. So... the crew and the director, they used a military area and an airfield north of Prague to film the battlefield, just like a huge mud field the size of 10 football fields.
It was just a big field of mud?
Yeah. One of the trenches locations took up a space that was 1 kilometer long and 600 meters wide.
It must have been so hard to film there, just like pillaging through mud all the time.
Yeah, that's a lot of preparation.
Mm-hmm.
To dig all that, and
they basically made trenches.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. The set design was really good too.
Yes, and the makeup and costumes, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they just put a bunch of mud on their faces all the time.
Yeah, and then it would, like, the mud would dry, and it would look realistic as to how
mud would dry.
Mud, yeah.
And then it stayed that way. Like, it was consistent. Like, they didn't fuck it up by, like, oh, the mud dried, but we're going to still shoot this scene again. Like, it was fresh mud.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
They always had it on point. Like, there was somebody there making sure it was always good. It's basically like a clay mask. It's probably great for his pores.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Relaxing spa-like.
It's relaxing spa-like. Sitting there with his face in the mud. Cucumbers on your eyes, yeah.
Another fun fact. Felix Kammer, the person playing Paul, to fit his body to the role, had to put on a 10-kilogram vest and ran 10 kilometers with it every day for months to prepare.
To lose weight?
To just... Yeah, I just prepare for the role physically.
Oh, yeah. It was very physically trying. I can't even imagine. Gosh, a 10K every day is like really hard on your body. That's 6 miles a day.
Because you're carrying, like in war, you're carrying all this stuff with you. There's no, oh, just set this down here, get it later. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you have to be in great shape and you also have absolutely no food and no sleep and...
And I just try to have a lack of moral compass.
Yeah, and you're also watching people die in front of you. And you are killing people. God, I can't even imagine. Like, it's just so brutal.
Yeah. And then the scene with the... I think you're still getting to this. But with the tanks and flamethrowers.
Yeah, we're not there yet. Oh, but we'll get there. Yeah, we'll get there.
Okay.
Okay. So, back to what I was talking about. So, this is when you find out where the train is going with Matthias, the guy who pees on his shoes. Just a reminder, in case you forgot. And so, they actually end up in France negotiating a ceasefire. And the Frenchmen are not happy, let me tell you. They're very, very not happy. And he basically gives the Germans 72 hours to either agree to their terms or get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And the Germans are like, okay, sure, we'll figure it out, basically. And like the one German guy, Matthias, is like, there are people dying out there. We need to agree to a ceasefire now.
Yeah,
and the guy's like, then sign it. Yeah. Like the guy was like, we will do it if you sign our, like, you agree to all of what we want. And a lot of the people, the German guys, didn't want to agree to it because they had a big ego. and so at this point, you don't really know what was decided or if anything was decided because they jump back to the trenches and they're answering the phone. And the way that you find out that they didn't agree to a ceasefire is the fact that they called all the men to action to go fighting. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, I guess they didn't sign a ceasefire, which I thought was smart. It's they didn't need them to stand there and be like, we're not going to decide right now. They didn't need them to say it. They just showed the men being called to action, you know? I thought it was really smart.
Show, don't tell.
Yeah. And I have a question. Like, how do they shoot scenes with, like, bombs going off?
So they have...
like, is it,
I mean, sometimes you can do CGI, but it's choreographed, so they'll...
But what if the guy accidentally steps on the bomb? Like, is it a real bomb or is it just like a dirt, like, launcher?
I'm sure they have those. I'm not quite sure, like, what the logistics are behind that. But they use, like, real explosives sometimes during movies.
Oh, God, that's so scary.
Yeah, I mean, and...
Wow.
And sometimes it is CGI, like... And parts where people were like being blown apart, like that was probably CGI.
I hope so.
Yeah, I would hope so.
I'm gonna just say that it was hopefully. Yes. Yeah,
this isn't like Come and See Again or anything like that.
So yeah, they basically this call to action where the men get told to go fight. Paul is a part of it. And Paul watches one of his friends dies, and this time it's different than the first time when his friend died. Like on the first day, this time his friend dies and he's like, well, shit. And then he keeps going.
Yeah.
Like he's numb to it. He just sees his friend die. He's upset, but he's like, he knows that he can't stop. Like he knows he has to keep going. And so they show Paul axe a man to death and
he's like, he's on X Games mode. He's just going.
Yes. He's fully X Games mode. But it's just so sad because it's like, he fucking kills this guy with an axe he doesn't even know. And like, he does all this hand-to-hand combat, looking people in the face. And it's like, you know, on a normal day, if he saw this guy, he wouldn't kill him.
Yeah.
He'd just walk by him on the street. But just because this is their circumstance and they're wearing those certain uniforms, they have to kill him.
Yep.
And it's just so sad. Like, they're literally killing each other for no reason. It's just over and over again, I'm going to keep saying that. But it was just so, it was so awful.
I'm going to make a bold statement. This is the greatest depiction of war since Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I really felt, like, the, like, despair of it, you know, watching the movie. I mean, obviously, it probably would feel worse in real life, but, like, they relayed it very well to us, how awful it would be and how terrible it is.
Yeah, perfectly encapsulates
I agree with that statement. Yeah.
Yeah, like, just, like, the senselessness of war and that it they shouldn't be fighting it, but they are, and that's their situation, so they're just going to do it.
They just have to do it. Yeah, it's literally amazing. And they do, there's a later scene that we're going to talk about where they really show like that they don't want to kill each other, you know. None of them really want to, they just do. It's just so infuriating. Like, I've never had a war movie make me this upset, and it's probably because you're right, it was a very good depiction of war and what it's really like. But so then the men, they end up in the French trenches, and there's bombs going off and people dying and screaming and gunshots, and they find their way into the kitchen and they start feasting.
Oh, right. Yeah. I missed the scene. Right.
Yeah, they start feasting in the kitchen. And then all of a sudden, you see the food begins to shake and the mice begin to run, like, hundreds of them away. And you're like, shit's about to get real. Because there's huge tanks coming at them from
that
the French
scene
side.
Was terrifying. Uh-huh.
It was really, really
the
awful.
The
literally the tanks drive over the trenches and you see it like crush people.
You see it crush a person.
Yeah, it was just awful. Like, oh, that guy was just in the wrong place at the wrong time and he got crushed by a tank.
Yeah.
You know? And then all of a sudden these guys come out with flamethrowers and they're like burning people to death. And it's like, I've seen a lot of horror movies, war movies, you know, and this one really made you feel the terror of the men like really well. And then Paul ends up actually seeing his friend Crop, the guy who had put up the poster of the woman that he had found get burned to death.
Yeah, burned alive.
Like, he's literally sitting there like, please don't kill me, please don't kill me, and they just shoot him with the flamethrower.
Yep. Fun fact, the French tanks that are shown are Saint Chamond's, weighed 23 tons.
Whoa.
Top speed of 7.5 miles per hour. Almost
Speedy
never,
McGee, 7.5?
Almost never achieved in action. Widely disliked because of its poor trench crossing ability and because its heavy
really
nose.
Yeah, they really showed that.
Its heavy nose often caused it to bog down.
So they were pretty crappy tanks, but they still got the job done for sure. 7.5 miles.
There's one
hour.
Surviving left in a museum in France.
So they just made a bunch of like replicas for the movie.
Oh yeah, somehow. Yeah,
must have needed a lot of budget for them. Can't even imagine. But yeah, that's cool that those were real.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
I mean, yeah, it was accurate design.
Was real. Yeah, they were really fucking scary. I can't imagine looking over a hill and seeing that coming at you.
Yeah,
with flamethrowers along
flame
the side
throwers.
Too. It was literally awful.
And then they're sticking grenades in there to try to take them out, put them in the tracks. That's what you got to do. Hit the tracks.
Yeah, and then
it
can't move anymore. Look at you. War expert over here, Jonathan.
What can I say? I've seen things.
Oh, shut up. So then it jumps from their fight and their war to the diplomats fighting.
Oh, yeah. It's more of
their
like
diplomatic war, which I thought was really well done. The contrast, I keep saying, was just really good that they jumped then to the war of the diplomats.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they're retreating because they're just being completely overrun.
Oh yeah, you're right.
French
so
forces.
Yeah, the Germans started to retreat. Like they made it into their trenches and they kind of won until the tanks came and the flamethrowers came. Yeah, you're right. And so then you get to the Germans debating if they're going to take the armistice or not, or the ceasefire or whatever. And one guy said something that was so infuriating. He was like, well, it's better for the men to die with honor in the battlefield than to die on the way home because it's winter.
Oh, right.
And be cold.
Oh.
And the guy was like, then Matthias was like, die with honor? Like, what are you talking about? My son died in this war. Like, where is his honor? You know? That was infuriating me. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, why would you even say that? Like, it is not about honor. Like, these people are not dying with honor. Ugh, it was just awful. And then you see Paul get stuck in a trench in no man's land.
Okay, he's hiding from the French forces,
yes.
And he goes in a crater.
He falls in a crater during the retreat process. And this is when you really see the mental conflict of these men killing each other when they don't really want to. And, like, I really thought this was a great scene because he's in this big pit and another French man shows up and tries to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And then so he attacks the French man with a knife and stabs him like a million times. But the guy doesn't die right away.
Yeah.
And so Paul, he's like, can I get out of this pit? Can I keep retreating? And so he puts his hat on like a stick and he raises it up and it gets shot. So he's like, they're going to shoot me if I try to run. So he's like, I have to stay in this pit. But then he realizes he's sitting in this pit with this man who's dying that he just stabbed.
Yeah,
and then this is when you start to see like the real mental toll of like, yeah, it's normalized for you to kill these people and like just walk away because you're just trying to survive, you know. But then when you have to actually sit there and watch this person that you killed die, like that's, and then he tries to help him and like save him and keep him from dying. And like,
it was a heartbreaking scene.
It was very heartbreaking. And then he sees like the man had a picture in his pocket of his wife and kid, and he's like, I wonder, like, in that time, if he was thinking, like, why, I wish he had just killed me, you know? Because, like, this man had children, like, a family to go home to, and he's the one who's standing. Like, it's almost like you can see him go through that in his brain, like, I almost wish I was the one who died, because now he has to face, like, that that happened to him. And, like, they show for a very long time the man's face just, like, struggling and, like, dying. And you're, like, you know that that is going to be, like, what is ingrained in his brain and, like, what he has PTSD from is, like, that image of the man dying. And they, like, keep it there so long that you can almost, like, experience what that would be like, having to see that on repeat in your head over and over again is, like, PTSD.
There's another scene like that at the end of the movie, too.
Yeah, that was a really good scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said.
Oh my gosh, thank you. I appreciate that. I thought that was one of the best scenes in the movie.
Me too.
It really humanized the two sides, and you know, I don't know, it was just really sad. I never really thought about war in that way. So then it cuts to General Friedrich, and he's upset because he knows that there is the negotiations to end the war, and he's like, I don't know how to be anything else. I've only ever been a soldier. My father's only ever been a soldier. And then he starts being like a total dick to this other guy whose family has like a business outside of the war. So like he has a job to go home to. Whereas like this Friedrich, like evil general, like his job is a general. He can't be anything but a general. What do you do with a general?
What's that from?
It's from Who's No Longer a General. My family would know. It's from, from? White Christmas.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. That movie.
But that's basically what he's going through right there, is that song from White Christmas. What do you do with a general who's no longer a general? Like, you can't do anything else. You know, you're useless. But you can tell, like, he's internally struggling with the fact that, like, his entire identity is, like, revolves around being at war. And what is he going to do now?
Yeah.
So he just wants to drag it out.
He was the one that was Kaiser, right? He was the Kaiser.
Kaiser?
Yeah, he was, like, that was his title, right?
I don't remember. He was a general.
I think it was Kaiser. He's one of
when I looked it up, his name is General Friedrich.
Mustache.
He had a mustache. Yeah. Okay. Why am I going like this? If you're watching on YouTube, I'm like making the weirdest like hand motion to signify a mustache. I don't know what that was. Yeah. But so they show that, and you're kind of like pissed because you know the generals just want the war to keep going for their own sake. So he could feel like a big shot. Mm-hmm. And so then Paul finally makes it to the camp with all the German soldiers. And he hears that the negotiations to end the war are underway. But he's not really happy.
No, but it doesn't feel happy.
It doesn't
scene.
Feel happy at all, which I thought was so smart. Like, he wasn't happy because he didn't know where any of his friends were. Like he went to the hospital to find some of his friends. And he found one of his friends, Jaden.
Yeah.
And Jaden was like shot in the leg or something. And he gets a little happy telling his friend like, hey, they're negotiating the end of the war. Like, you're going to survive. That's what makes him happy. It's like being able to tell his friends that it's going to end. Like, it's something he wants to experience with them because he went through the war with them.
He finds Kat, too.
Yes, and he finds Kat at, like, the mess hall, whatever, getting food. And so him and Kat get soup, and they bring it back to Jaden. And there was a scene where, like, Jaden is like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I'm a ranger outside of the war, and, like, I can't do that anymore.
I can't live as
because
a,
now that I'm going to lose my leg.
I can't live as a cripple, yeah.
Yeah, like, he was so upset that he was going to be unable to, he probably would have had his leg amputated
for sure.
And so this scene was very graphic, and Jaden basically he successfully kills himself, like stabbing himself in the throat with the fork.
With a fork, yeah.
And it's like, I just can't even believe like the things that they had to see and go through, like that he would rather kill himself than like have to live after the war in his situation, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't even, oh, go ahead.
Kat says like, what do you think? Like, they're at peace and we're alive.
So who?
About the dead people, about everybody that lost their lives. Yeah. At least they're at peace.
Yeah, at least they're at peace. And that's almost like what Jaden wanted when he killed himself. And it's, you're right. Like, it was so weird. It was like, they have seen so much, and like, it's like they're not even happy that the war is ending because they don't know what to do after. Like, they don't know how to go back to normal life. And like, at least their friends who died, like, at least with quotations and not really any better of a situation. Yeah, yeah. Like, at least they are at peace now and they don't have to live with the trauma and like all that stuff the rest of their lives and then learn how to be normal again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting. Like, it's like Paul is almost upset that the war is going to end. He doesn't know what to do with himself. And he said it like this. He was like, you can't just put 2 years of hand grenades away like a pair of socks, yeah. Which was a really good line. I thought that was a great line. About like having to be able to go back from war and just be normal again. And it's interesting, like, it hardened the men so much that like when Jaden had like been stabbing himself in the neck to die and Paul and Kat are like trying to save him, some other soldier just comes up and steals their soup.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's not even fazed, doesn't try to save him or help. He's just steals their soup.
Yeah.
Like, it was literally all there was. He didn't care. And it's like, that guy's not a bad guy. He's at a point where like he can't even fathom, like he just doesn't care anymore, like he's so numb, and he's like, well, this is an opportunity to get a meal, you know. You're right, like there was no happiness in the war ending.
It was just like haunting. Mm-hmm. That whole scene.
Yep. And so this is when they cut back to the French generals meeting with the German generals for the armistice. And they start the scene. This is so smart. Whoever writes this kind of stuff is so smart. One of the French generals, when they're waiting for the German guys to show up, is like, bites a croissant.
Yeah.
And then he calls over the
steward.
The steward, and is like, does this taste fresh to you? And the steward like tries it and he's like, no, it doesn't, I'm sorry. And it's like, are you kidding me? Yeah. That's what you're thinking about right now? The croissants aren't fresh. Like, oh, it was just so infuriating. Like, it was so smart. Like, showing all the little annoyances for the rich guys who have to sit there and negotiate an armistice. And so then they meet, and Matthias asks for mercy and fairness, and the French are like, excuse me, fairness? Like, you just came in here and killed all of our people? Like,
which is exactly what the Germans did, technically.
Yeah, so like, it was kind of like, yeah, you don't really deserve fairness.
Yeah.
And so then they agree to the armistice, and they sign it. And
doesn't take place until the
11th hour, yes, of the 11th day of the 11th month. Very poetic.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if it was really necessary, but very poetic.
I think it's realistic.
Yeah, I get it. Like, they can't just like call it right now because everybody needs to know when to stop shooting. But it's also like, technically the war isn't over. And then that comes into play with some drama mama. So this is announced, and evil General Frederick is not happy with it. He says, no, thank you. And he goes, assemble the troops in the morning, and we are going to attack, basically. And so you figure that out and you're like, well, damn, that sucks.
Yeah, gotta go back.
And none of the soldiers know this. So like, the soldiers are like celebrating, like, oh, there's going to be an armistice. That means the war is over. Like, we don't have to fight anymore. And so Paul and Kat, at this point, this is when you find out that Kat is like a shoemaker and Paul is a rich boy, and like, that's when already those social class restrictions and separations are already coming into play. Just because they know the war is going to end, you know, because Paul was like, we need to do something together after the war is over, and Kat was like, no, we can't, like, we're different people, we can't be friends anymore. It was really sad.
We're not cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, we're not cut from the same cloth. And so this part kind of infuriated me and gave me unnecessary anxiety. But these two men, Paul and Kat, are like, okay, we're going to go back to that place we stole a goose from.
Yeah.
And we're going to steal some more breakfast to celebrate the end of the war. So Paul jumps the fence and he steals some eggs. And he ends up getting caught by the little boy at the farmhouse who sees him. And so they get away. And I was really mad at this point because I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you're literally about to survive the end of the war and you need to go steal eggs and potentially get shot by a farmer. Like, and I don't know. I was just so annoyed by it. And so they made it out okay. And they ate the eggs literally like raw in a field.
Liquid.
And they were like, so delicious.
It probably tastes good.
It would taste really good at that point. So then Kat goes off to pee in the woods. And this is when the little boy, who's really mad that they stole his eggs, comes out with a gun and he shoots Kat.
Yeah.
And Kat dies. And it's infuriating.
Just that whole scene.
It didn't need to die. I guess nobody needed to die. I guess it's just another like nail in the coffin of like war doesn't need to happen. Like none of them need to die.
Throughout the whole movie, like the use of like sound to create suspense is like excellent. The sound design when Kat was just standing in the forest and you hear like the wind blowing through the trees.
You know something's wrong. Yeah. That's true.
I thought that was brilliant.
I didn't even think about that. That was really well done. So that was really frustrating. And at this point, Paul just becomes a shell of a human because all of his friends have officially died from the war. And he's the only one left. And this is when evil General Friedrich, his name now is evil first name, general
evil,
middle name, Friedrich,
evil Friedrich,
last name, evil General Friedrich, is like, okay, boys, it's only like 10 a.m., but we're still going to go attack the French and try to take the trench. Take the trench from the French.
French trenches.
The French trench.
Nothing
take
rhymes with
the
trifle.
Trench from the French. I just can't stop saying it for some reason. Because he's like, we're going to end on a victory. Because he had been complaining earlier, like, all of my family has been like successful generals and I am not. And so we have to go take this trench so that I can be a successful general.
Costing hundreds.
So furious.
Thousands of lives.
Yeah, literally killing thousands of people because he is mad that he didn't get to win a battle in the war. And the men march on in there. And you can tell Paul is just a shell of a human. And, you know, honestly, I would just like hang out in the back. I don't want to kill anybody else anymore. I don't want to deal with this anymore. I would have just not, like, Paul went full send on this. Like, the war, when they got to the battlefront, there was 15 minutes left before the ceasefire. And Paul just sends it. He's like, I'm going to kill everybody in my sight.
Did you see what happened to the people that were like, no, I'm not going to go?
Didn't they kill them?
Yeah.
Yeah, they killed. Yeah, but I would have just, like, hung out in the back, you know?
Oh.
I just wouldn't have been, like, full send, kill everybody.
True.
I would have just, like, slowly strolled holding my gun. Well, obviously, I wouldn't have been on the war front because I'm a woman, but...
If you were.
If I was, like, I mean, at this time, today, I could be, but at that time, I probably would not have been.
Yeah.
Unless I was, like, pulling a Mulan or something, which I wouldn't do that either. But I do get called sir a lot.
What?
I get called sir a lot.
When do you get called sir?
Well, I used to have really short hair, and I'd get called sir, like, when I was younger.
Oh.
Yeah, people would think I was a boy, but I'm not, in
no
case
way.
Anybody was wondering. So, my phone is ringing.
Who is it?
Somebody is calling me. I will call them back later. So yeah, Paul full sends it and is trying to kill everybody. And it's just like a final hurrah and proof of the fact that the war is for the rich and not for the men who are fighting it. Because if they really cared about the men who were fighting it, they wouldn't send them out to kill people at that time. Because the French are just Jay chilling. Like, they're just drinking, talking, popping a bottle of wine, mm-hmm. having a good time. Like, thank God it's over. And then the German troops come flying in, like, we're going to try to kill you.
The one take here is really well done.
See, I feel bad because I didn't really notice any of the one takes, but I know this movie was known for the one takes.
Yeah, it had a lot of good one takes.
Yeah.
Especially at the end.
Yeah, I saw that it was known for it, but I didn't, like, really notice them a bunch.
Hmm.
But I bet they were great if I had been paying attention to them. Yeah, so then the most frustrating thing in the entire movie happens, and about 2 seconds before they call the ceasefire, Paul is like fighting with this French man, and they kind of have a realization where they're like,
why are we killing each other?
And then somebody comes up from behind and stabs Paul in the heart.
Which is like,
and it's like,
seconds
why did he
before.
Even have to do that? Like, they could have just all waited there for the ceasefire to call. But that's just like another,
impeccable
again,
timing.
Emphasis on the same theme over and over and over again, that like, they didn't need to die. Like, none of them needed to die. And they kind of drilled that into you very aggressively with the whole movie, basically, that war is useless and there's literally no point in it. Yeah. Just because a man in a room can't have, like, a serious conversation and get over their issues, they're instead going to kill thousands of people. Or millions of people, actually.
Darn it.
Oh, we're almost done. Yeah, and then at the end, they show the poster of Krop, like...
The poster,
because they're back in the trenches that they were in originally, where Krop, his friend who had put up that advertisement of the woman, had hung it. You see it again.
Yeah.
Still hanging there. Yeah. And then they jump back to evil General Friedrich, who is sitting in a room as the clock chimes. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You didn't even go out there to fight with them? Like, oh, no, no, you sent them all to die, and you're still upset. Like, regardless of if he had sent the men out or if he hadn't, he would still have felt the same way that he did. Because you could see he was like, oh, you know, upset that the war had ended. And it's just infuriating that he had the control over those men to make them do that. Like, he was the only one who called that shot. Somebody could have just shot him dead, and then they'd be done. You know what I mean? But no, he said it, so everybody did it. And then there's a full circle moment where there's another new soldier who had just been, like, brought out to the battlefront, is collecting the dog tags, and he takes Paul's because Paul has died from getting stabbed in the heart.
When Paul is walking up the bunker, it's almost like he's, like, walking
You think
up
he's
to
walking
heaven.
To heaven. Yeah, I thought the same thing. Because he was in a bunker when he got stabbed. And I thought he was going to just collapse on the ground, but he gets up and he walks out of the bunker. And you're right. It's almost like he walked to heaven, the light, you know?
When the soldiers are first singing, like, in the beginning of the movie, they're marching and singing, and the order in which they appear is the order in which they die in, which is really interesting. The order in which they're lined up.
Wait.
With Paul being last.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that. That's really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's really sad. That's a good fun fact, though.
Thanks.
Yeah, but so then the final shot of the movie, and I thought this was really good, is they show the exact same cinematic shot from the first scene, and it's like, kind of the emphasis, and at least the metaphor I got from it was like the stunt, the sun still rises, everything looks the same, the world is still the same, the earth is still the same, but everything is different just because the war is over now.
That's good,
you know.
Yeah.
But it's exactly the same because it's another thing of like the war is senseless, it literally changes nothing, there's just more men dead now.
17 million.
Yeah, they showed at the end that 17 million people died in World War III. World War III. No.
World War III happens.
No, thank
a lot
you.
More died.
Let's not have that happen, everybody. 17 million people died in World War I. 3 million people died in the trench warfare that was going on in France, and they literally said that like those trenches, like they made no ground. There was literally no gains over the years of the war. Like just 3 million people died for no reason. To like make no changes. So yeah, that's all that I have written down for the movie.
A lot written down.
It was an emotional roller coaster, but it was really good. And I recommend anybody watch it because it really gives you like a great differing opinion and viewpoint of war that normal cinema doesn't give you. Like right now you still kind of get that like glorified, almost propaganda-esque, like it's fun, you meet all your buddies, like you have a good time. In reality, they were more just like friends because they needed each other to survive, like the emotional support of like having somebody else there to fight for and fight for you. But yeah, great movie. 4.5 out of 5.
Good. This is a lot like
Fantasmic.
It's a lot like Come and See. That it's a Russian war movie from 1985 that is pretty much a horror movie just in war, and it's it's in World War II, but it's a lot similar.
Yeah. Whew. Well, what movie are we gonna talk about next time? Should we do The Fablemans?
Yes.
But what was always nominated again? I don't remember.
We need to watch Fablemans and Women Talking.
Those are the only ones left that we haven't already seen.
Yes.
Let me see. I'm pulled up. Yeah, that's true. Let's do The Fablemans. Because technically we have seen pretty much everything else except for Women Talking. It's just that we saw them before the podcast. So yeah, we're going to do The Fablemans next week. And it's a Spielberg. My sister used to be a huge Spielberg fan. So I wonder if she already watched this. But
she did.
Oh, she did? Oh, yeah, because you follow her on Letterboxd. That's funny. Okay, we're going to do The Fablemans next week, y'all. So we will see you then.
Adios.
Bye.